Okay, English translation by Shaw Prabhupada, of course. This child will be a munificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered, like the famous king, Shibi, of the Ishanara country. And he will expand the name and fame of his family, like Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. Purport. Just to those with books or phones in front of you, you may already know, but it's quite a hefty, substantial purport, so please bear with me, and I'll... yes, must be at least a couple of pages long there. A king becomes famous by his acts of charity, performances of yagyas, protection of the surrendered, etc. A Kshatriya king is proud to give protection to the surrendered souls. This attitude of a king is called Ishvara Bhav, or a factual power to give protection in a righteous cause. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructs living entities to surrender unto him, and he promises all protection. The Lord is all-powerful and true to his word, and therefore he never fails to give protection to his different devotees. The king, being the representative of the Lord, must possess this attitude of giving protection to the surrendered souls at all risk. Maharaj Shibi, the king of Dushyanta, was an intimate friend of Maharaj Yayati, who was able to reach the heavenly planets along with Maharaj Shibi. Maharaj Shibi was aware of the heavenly planet where he was to be transferred after his death, and the description of this heavenly planet is given in the Mahabharata Adiparva 96:6-9. Maharaj Shibi was so charitably disposed that he wanted to give over his acquired position in the heavenly kingdom to Yayati, but he did not accept it. Yayati went to the heavenly planet along with great rishis like Ashtaka and others. On inquiry of the rishis, Yayati gave an account of Shibi's pious acts, and when all of them were on the path to heaven, he had become a member of the assembly of Yamaraj, who had become his worshipable deity. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, the worshipper of the demigods goes to the planets of the demigods. Yanti deva vrata devan. So Maharaj Shibi had become an associate of the great Vaishnav authority, Yamaraj, on that particular planet. While he was on the earth, he became very famous as a protector of surrendered souls and a donor of charities. The king of heaven once took the shape of a pigeon hunter bird, otherwise an eagle, and Agni, the fire god, took the shape of a pigeon. The pigeon, being chased by the eagle, took shelter on the lap of Maharaj Shibi, and the hunter eagle wanted the pigeon back from the king. The king wanted to give it some other meat to eat and requested the bird not to kill the pigeon. The hunter bird refused to accept the king's offer, but it was settled later on that the eagle would accept flesh from the body of the king pigeon's equivalent weight. The king began to cut the flesh from his body to weigh in the balance equivalent to the weight of the pigeon, but the mystic pigeon always remained heavier. The king then put himself on the balance to equate with the pigeon, and the demigods were pleased with him. The king of heaven and the fire god disclosed their identity, and the king was blessed by them. Devarshi Narad also glorified Maharaj Shibi for this great achievements, specifically in charity and protection. Maharaj Shibi sacrificed his own son for the protection of human beings in his kingdom, and thus the child Prikshit was to become a second Shibi in charity and protection. Dushyanti Bharat, Prabhupada writes it, there are many Bharats in history, of which Bharat, the brother of Lord Ram, Bharat, the king of son of King Rishab, and Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta, are all very famous. And all of these Bharats are historically known to the universe. This earth planet is known as Bharat or Bharatvarsh, due to King Bharat, the son of Rishab, but according to some, this land is known as Bharat due to the reign of the son of Dushyanta. So far as we are convinced, this land's name, Bharatvarsh, was established from the reign of Bharat, the son of King Rishab. Before him, the land was known as Ilatvarsh. But just before the coronation of Bharat, the son of Rishab, this land became famous as Bharatvarsh. But despite all of this, Bharat was the son of Maharaj Dushyanta, who was no less important. He is the son of the famous beauty Shakuntala. Maharaj Dushyanta fell in love with Shakuntala in the forest, and Bharat was conceived. After that, Maharaj forgot his wife Shakuntala by the curse of Kanva Muni, and the child Bharat was brought up in the forest by his mother. Even in his childhood, he was so powerful that he challenged the lions and elephants in the forest and would fight with them as little children play with cats and dogs. Because of the boys becoming so strong, more than the so-called modern Tarzan, the rishis in the forest called him Svavadharma, or one who is able to control everyone. A full description of Bharat, Maharaj Bharat, is given in the Mahabharat, Adi Leva Parva. The Pandavas, or the Kurus, are sometimes addressed as Bharat due to being born in the dynasty of the famous Maharaj Bharat, the son of King Dushyanta. I'll just read the English translation again. This child will be a munificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered, like the famous King Shibi of the Ushanara country. And he will expand the name and fame of the family like Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. Om Agyanam Tridam Dasha Jalangra Sharakaya Jaksho Mitam Yena Tismay Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Shapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Garam Mayam Tadanti Sva Padanti Kam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Saya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gudavani Pacharine Nivasesha Shunyavadi Prashachade Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaudabhata Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the context of this particular verse, of course, for those who have been attending previous classes or are familiar with this chapter, is about in regard to the birth, really, of Maharaj Parikshit, who appeared just at the very end of the last Yuga, actually, near the beginning of this Kali Yuga. Of course, the Brahmanas were glorifying him, saying, well, he was protected by Lord Krishna right from being in the womb of his own mother. Ashwatthama actually wanted to kill Maharaj Parikshit in the womb of his mother. He was actually going to use a Brahmastra weapon to do that, which is almost very, very powerful weapon. But of course, Lord Krishna, or Vishnu actually, appeared in his forearm form in the womb of the mother just to protect Maharaj Parikshit. The Brahmanas were aware of this, chanted auspicious mantras, and were glorifying Maharaj Parikshit and saying, he is a worthy successor to that of Yudhisthira. And of course, they're glorifying him, blessing him, and giving him all the ceremonial honor that was due to someone who was going to be king of the civilized world. Because that was basically as it was. And this is something that comes across in Prabhupada's purport, and as well as the verse, of course, which is the relationship, the Vedic relationship between a kshatriya, a king, and the brahmanas, and how the two together were essentially ruling society. That both the brahmanas had their own specialization, but the kshatriyas also had their responsibilities, was in many ways was no less important. So they didn't cross over each other's responsibilities because each one was so specialized. But when the leaders of society, the kings and the monarchs and the politicians and so forth, were working together with respect to and in reverence to the Brahmana class, that ensured that the Vedic culture itself was followed and upheld by society at large. And we can see here Prabhupada's purports especially is emphasizing the austerities and the nature of kings like Maharaj Shibi, Maharaj Yayati in particular. And basically we're saying that the Brahmanas are saying, well, Maharaj Parikshit, who was, of course, much more recent historically, was no less honourable, was no less charitable, no less glorious than the kings of old. We also have to understand the context here, because of course the Bhagavatam was spoken about 5,000 years ago, and Maharaj Pritchett was born roughly around that same period. But Maharaj Yayati, Maharaj Shibi were great ancient historical monarchs from their point of view, because we're going back yugas. They lived many, many tens of thousands of years ago. If you do your maths and everything like that, you work it out. They were around, Maharaj Yayati, Maharaj Shibi were around in the Treta Yuga. So we're talking about a very, very long time ago. So they were legends, if you like, of old, that even 5,000 years ago, which is relatively recently compared with the age of the earth and Vedic culture as a whole. So let's have a look here. So of course, no need for me to repeat what Prabhupada has already said, but just to kind of pick on one or two points which kind of jumped out on the page to me. Basically, Krishna blesses the leaders. The understanding, this is even something which was understood in European monarchs, fallen and Kali Yuga-ish as they were in comparison with the monarchs in the Bhagavatam. But even in the Kali Yuga, very definitely recently, the idea of the monarch or the king or the queen was supposed to represent God, actually. Was supposed to be the head of the church or the head of the religious aspect. And this was certainly the case Vedically, and whatever existed or flowed through into the Kali Yuga obviously was remnants of that Vedic understanding. It was like Kali Yuga versions of what was actually it was meant to be. The same thing, of course, with Varna and Ashram. The Kali Yuga has basically reduced that to what we now call the caste system. But Varna and Ashram was actually something very different, as we'll explore in a minute. What I would say is that the kings of former yugas, like Yayati, like Maharshibi, were direct descendants of the demigods. In fact, in this case, they were in the line of the Lunar dynasty. So descendants of Chandraloka, from Maharaj Chandra, the moon god. And of course, they lived for many, many thousands of years. And not only did they have access to the earth, they actually, many of their ancient ancestors, actually from the Lunar and the Solar dynasties, ruled entire planetary systems. The further you go back, we have a situation not of evolution, where we're becoming more and more sophisticated over millions of years. Actually, it's devolution of a kind, where actually in former yugas, at least those who were kind of part of civilized societies, were far more advanced spiritually, economically, morally, culturally, mystically, technologically even in some cases, than we are today. That is the great mystery, that this is actually hidden from mainstream society. But if we were behaving like the Brahmanas, or we understood, we had the paradigm of the Brahmanas of thousands of years ago, who actually understood their true lineage and the true history, if we were to meditate on that, as the Bhagavatam encourages us to do so, we would also be encouraged in our spiritual lives. We're not monkeys or apes that manage to kind of stand up straight a little bit. That's not our role model. That's not our lineage. Our lineage, actually, is the sun and moon dynasties. It's understood, Prabhupada actually says, that all men, people, you know, obviously, ultimately, on the earth today, the whole of the human race is descending from Ikshvaku Manu, actually. Who came along with other demigods to replenish the earth following the end of the last Kali Yuga. That was the Sun dynasty, and then slightly later on in the Treta Yuga came the Lunar dynasty. But these two dynasties all had something in common. They were all pious, particularly the kings and of course, the brahmanas. So this is basically like that. The King Yati, Maharaj Shibi, all the different Bharats, of course, had all something in common. They were all fulfilling their duties as Kshatriyas, and therefore proper Kshatriyas. And it's not a case of, oh yeah, I like to fight, therefore I'm a Kshatriya, or I like to do a lot of administration, or I'm a a politician there. No, there was a whole culture and paradigm behind their leadership. There was a price to pay. There's a modern saying, with great power becomes great responsibility. And they understood that. They very much understood that. And any Vedic king worthy of representing God, yes, they were opulent, but what did they do with their opulence? They were charitable, they were generous. They would actually spend a lot of, I won't use the word money, but you know, whatever currency or type of system they used millions of years ago. You know, they used all their facility in yagyas, sacrifices, and in particular giving charity to the brahmanas, who were in many ways reliant on charitable donations. Because the brahmanas were living simply, either living in temple compounds, living in hermitages, in rural areas. They were not living in palaces, but therefore they became. But they were also, the general populace could see the brahmanas were the head of society. And therefore, what that created, and when they saw their own king bow down to the brahmanas and the sages and the rishis and all the rest of it, oh, please, Maharaj, you've blessed me by entering into this palace. Please let me wash your feet. When society at large was conscious of that type of culture, the other varnas, as it were, the general population, were spiritually inspired. Not thinking, I want more, I want a bigger car, I want this, I want the latest phone, I want this, I want a bigger house, I want to achieve, I want... They understood, well, the leaders of society are not doing that. They're setting another type of example. An example of piety, surrender, simplicity, renunciation, even that of the kings. All of these kings, Maharaj Ambarish, Bharat, King Yati, actually, as our Shibi, all these great monarchs, Prithu Maharaj, what did they actually do in the latter stages of their life? They thought, okay, I've ruled the kingdom, I've got that out of my system. I just want to be like a Brahmana now. I just want to be like a sage. I'm just going to the forest. I'm not going to be, try not to be attached. I mean, Bharat and the Dio is another issue. I'll try not to be attached to my kingdom because I can't take it with me at the time of death. It doesn't matter if we have a hermitage or a palace or a terraced house in Watford. Whatever attribute we have, we can't take it with us at the time of death. The Brahmanas in particular, the sages, were particularly conscious of this. And the Kshatriyas actually had so much responsibility and so much more, at least the ones in the Luna and the Sun dynasties, had so much opulence. But still, the culture was such that they were generous with that opulence and would give, as I say, give to the, you know, facilitate the Brahmanas. But the Brahmanas, in exchange, would give them something in return, which was to preach to them or to perform their various sacrifices. But preaching, just like, for example, the relationship between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, with the recitation of the Bhagavatam itself, the kings were slightly more influenced by the mode of passion than the Brahmanas, actually, despite the actions of Yayati and Rishibi. There was a sense of, they had to be a little bit passionate to rule a kingdom, sometimes conquer other kingdoms, sometimes defend their kingdom. And to do that, that's not a Brahminical attribute. Who a Brahmin wouldn't take up a weapon unless it was with their thread to curse somebody or something, or perform something slightly more subtle or mystic. The Kshatriyas, you had to use a sword. So what this meant was that they needed the Brahmanas to actually advise them, like a, you know, like an emperor would need a senate, for example, to say, look, Maharaj, maybe we shouldn't go to war at this point. Maybe we should negotiate, and so on and so forth. Thus, like I mentioned earlier, this relationship, this way that the world was run, kept things in balance like that. And that was the importance of the original version of the Varna and Ashram. But what I wanted to do was just talk a little bit about the various Maharajas that have appeared prominently in Prabhupada's purport, namely Maharaj Shibi and Maharaj Yati. I think, because lessons can be learnt from them. And also, I to be honest with you, I didn't know too much about Maharaj Shibi, so I had to do some research on him. I got caught out there. I thought, well, another great king to learn about. So mentioned before, he's a famous king descending from the Luna dynasty, renowned for his liberal beliefs and selflessness. He actually, of course, we know the story how he was cutting off his own flesh just to save what he thought was just a pigeon. Such was the, and we talk about animal welfare, animal rights, but I think Maharaj Shibi was just kind of took it one step further. isn't it? The animal rights and green issues and environmental issues are quite trendy these days. And sometimes people think that we don't actually have enough. Sometimes devotees say that we have a lot of philosophy, but sometimes we feel we don't have enough quotes or enough information on environmental or animal rights issues in the scriptures. But actually, we have tons of it. We just have to know how to understand it. He was one of the greatest kings, most powerful kings on the planet at the time, the planet Bharat, who was willing practically to take off his own skin and flesh to save the life of what he believed was a simple pigeon at the time. Thus, for that, he was rewarded for his great sacrifice. But of course, he was restored. His flesh and everything like that was, of course, restored in the end by the demigods Agni and Indra. Shibi had conquered the entire world single-handedly and performed the horse sacrifices, the Ashmaveda yagyas, and was extremely charitable, as we know. Once, Shibi slew his own son just to satisfy a brahmana. But the brahmana, of course, realized it was his folly and then with his mystic ability, brought Shibi's son back to life. Of all his family, Shibi was the greatest for observing dharma. So this is actually quite incredible. There's another aspect, actually, which gets mentioned in the Vedas and in the Bhagavatam also, was some of the sacrifices that the Maharajas would perform in Kali Yugas. And no less so, in fact, in particular, Maharaj Shibi's friend, King Yayati. King Yayati actually inherited the kingdom because his brother, Yati, his older brother, turned it down and became an ascetic. So therefore, Yati inherited the kingdom of the world. It's very famous. He had a very famous chariot, and within 6 days, Yati actually conquered the entire planet. Just 6 days. I don't think we could even do that today. I mean, that was just with the chariot. So he was mystically and of course, militarily empowered. And with that, and because of that, because of the power Yati had, his descendants actually ruled the world's, all the world's cardinal directions. And it's understood, actually, Prabhupada actually writes that Yayati was the original forefather of all the great nations of the world who belonged to the Aryan and also the Indo-European stock. So all these ancient empires, the Greeks, the Turks, and so forth, were actually ultimately descendants of Maharaj Yayati, interestingly enough. But in his youth, Yayati, when he became king, he was extremely opulent, extremely wealthy. Actually, there's a list here. I don't know if I should go for the entire list, but to give you an idea of the kind of sacrifices that he would perform. In his life, there was 100 Rajasuras. Rajasuras is when other kings would pay their respects and coronate an emperor. So that happened 100 times. So assumingly, he went around the world and this was going on, where the other local rulers were declaring Maharaj Yayati's superiority. So that happened in 100 separate rituals. There was Pundarikas, worshipping Vishnu with flowers. Atiratras, advanced rituals and austerities. He performed 1,000 of them. 100 Ashmaredas. Again, that would actually be like a horse sacrifice, of course, which is controversial by today's standards. But again, very, very different. Another difference between former Yugas, like the Treta Yuga and the Kali Yuga. Because at that time, such was the power and the purity of the Brahmanas when performing various rituals, chanting in particular mantras and offering a horse actually in the fire. The horse did not die. It actually gained a younger body within the same ritual. And that way, everyone knew that Lord Vishnu had accepted the offering. And this was actually one of the systems of the Treta Yuga. In other words, they did not kill the horse. Rather, they gave the horse a younger body. But of course, as time went by, particularly in the Kali Yuga, the Brahmanas lost their potency, the whole process lost its potency and purpose, and Brahmanas were actually killing animals for the sake of it, by using the Vedas as reference points and saying, no, we have to kill this animal now. So the Lord had to appear as Lord Buddha to preach Ahimsa and say, no, no more, no more. Because basically people were not qualified, and the original context of the Ashwamedha sacrifice was misunderstood. Hence, Buddha or others have to come sometimes to kind of reset the balance, to readdress such issues. Is everything so different today compared to millions of years ago, or even thousands of years ago? Marjayati was very particularly famous for his charity to the Brahmanas. He gave away, says here, mountains of gold. Mountains of gold. You know, imagine how much gold that is. And also millions of cows to Brahmanas. So again, talking about the different Varnas, the Vaishyas were the farmers, were mainly kind of in touch mostly with cows. So again, they themselves were giving to the king. The king would pass on to the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas would use whatever, you know, the minimum of what they needed. They themselves would pass it on to each other and give in charity to society as a whole also. But Yayati, he's famous also. Who knows the story of Yayati, how he was cursed, actually, by Shukracharya? Because Yayati was very good-looking, he was very handsome, he was very opulent, he lived for hundreds of thousands of years. He had a lot going for him, basically. You know, he wasn't a Kali Yuga person at all. But like I mentioned earlier, Kshatriyas also had a little bit of passion in them. And you only have to kind of glance through the pages of the Mahabharata to kind of get an idea of that. That yes, they had their duty with great power and responsibility was there, and the various duties of a Kshatriya. But their general nature was that, you know, you don't challenge them unless you want to get beaten up or something. You know, there was a bit of passion there, because that it's needed to manage and to rule. It's just life to do that. They couldn't be too detached, let's say, because they did have palaces and kingdoms to rule. So Yayati, he was very popular with the ladies, actually, and as a result of that, it was actually at one point there was two queens he got pregnant simultaneously, and the queens were basically cursing each other, and there was envy between them. So Shukracharya, who was the guru of one of the queens, became angry and cursed Maharaj Yayati for his misdeeds, apparently. And he says, well, you will now grow old. You handsome man, you're attracting all the ladies, but I'm going to put a stop to that. So he cursed him to grow old prematurely. And this was a big thing. Again, you know, tinged by the mode of passion, I imagine. Marjayati was very, very upset by this. As you can imagine, someone who looked like they were 25, now looking like they're 90. I don't think there'd be many people who were, and perhaps feeling like they were 90 as well. And, you know, Prabhupada actually says many times, there's no fun in this material world. It's just, you know, birth, death, old age and disease. It's no place for a gentleman. And Marjayati must have, after this curse, must have been absolutely devastated. And he couldn't enjoy with his young wives anymore, physically. Or I'm sure they probably weren't as physically attracted to him either, looking like he was old and wrinkled and everything. So he fell at Shukracharya's feet and said, please, please, this is too much. This is too much. Please do something about this curse. Retract it or sand it off in some way, maybe provide some kind of get-out clause or something like this, some small print, you know. So fortunately, sometimes when curses are particularly bad, often if the guru in question, if the guru or the Maharaj or the Muni or something in question is got a merciful side, he can't withdraw that curse. What we can do is say, okay, this is your get-out clause. If you can find a young man to swap his youth with your old age, then that's fine. His own son, Yayati, I think it was Puru, I think it was. Yeah, Puru, who again had his own lineage around the world, actually, later on. He said, okay, Dad, I'll do that for you. You are my father. Again, this is a cultural difference. Father, whatever you do, can you imagine this happening today? Dad, can I just swap your age with mine, you know? And because he was so dutiful and so respectful of his father and saw his own father's distress. And also his father was the king as well, you know, and a representative of God. His own son, Peru, said, okay, I'll sacrifice my youth. I'll grow old. I'll get the wrinkles and the bad back and everything and the, you know, the hip problem or whatever. And you will become young again. And Margiati actually, he did that. He actually accepted that. And of course, he glorified his son and made sure his son, Peru, inherited the world after, or most of the world afterwards. But of course, thereafter, Margiati continued to offer sacrifices and lived a very, very opulent worldly life. But he came to a certain age. I don't know what age it was, but they lived for hundreds of thousands of years in the Treta Yuga. So I guess tens of thousands of years, rather. So it must have been a long time. But as Yeti got older, he realized his folly, actually. He said, you know what? It's time for me to renounce all this. I've got it out of my system. I've kinged about a bit. Now it's time for me to move on. I will turn myself to the and set the example of Maharaj Chibi and others to renounce the kingdom. And you know what? I don't need this young body anymore. And he, with special arrangement, again, some mystic process we cannot understand today, he gave back his youth back to his son, Peru. He said, okay, I've done my bit. I've got all this enjoyment. Now it's time for me to kind of become an ascetic, like his older brother did, Yati. So that's what happened. Peru got his good karma in a sense, because he got his youth back, and Yati got his old age back and became a perfect ascetic. And of course, entered into the heavenly realms at the time of death. So this is kind of amazing, really. Amazing personalities that we're describing here. And in one sense, we can't relate to them. Taking off your own flesh to save the life of a pigeon, a son swapping places, essentially swapping age with their father, essentially. And so on, honoring curses and so forth. And great expense, great opulence. For example, with some of these Pushpa sacrifices these kings were performing, it wasn't just a handful of flowers from the garden. This was done, you know, we're talking about tons and tons of flowers, tons of ghee. More ghee that would actually fill this room, actually. We're talking about major fire, Treta Yuga-style fire sacrifices sponsored by the monarch. So such is life. So, of course, in this day and age, kings cannot and do not imitate these type of processes. We today have to take shelter of the process for this age. They had their process, which was applicable, which attracted the attention, the blessings of Lord Vishnu. But we have to understand that, in one sense, in comparison to that, our fallen condition, and yet our get-out clause, our small print, our where the mercy is, which is in the holy name. Lord Chaitanya, Advaita Acharya, saw actually the condition it was in. So the things are really degraded now. Please, Lord, come descend to this planet and sort it all out. Of course, he came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give the holy name of the Lord. So this is actually our great fortune. So it's like making a good deal out of a bad bargain. The bad bargain being the Kali Yuga, being these bodies, maximum of 100 years to live, and so forth. It's a bad bargain. We go back in time, just going back in time to, just to round things off, Maharaj Pritchett. Yes, he was glorified by the Brahmanas, and they were optimistic, actually. But what happened? He got cursed by Sringi, the Brahmana. And thus began the decline of the Brahmin-Kshatriya relationship and ultimately the decline of Vedic culture. Young boy Sringi cursed the emperor of the world, Maharaj Pritchett, to be killed, to be stung, to be bitten by the snake bird Takshaka. Actually, with the Takshaka mantra. And thus we know that Maharaj Pritchett became himself, essentially became an ascetic and heard the Bhagavatam in 7 days. But after that, his son Jamijaya and subsequent monarchs began to rule less, and as the Kali Yuga proceeded, began to rule less and less of the world, rather than dominating the world, became less and less and less. And thus the world got divided into many, many different fighting kingdoms, and a bit like we recognize today, actually. So this is interesting. So very, very interesting relationship. But just to complete the, just to finish off then, the callous curse of Sringi, who was upset because of the offence made to his father by Parikshit. He transgressed the Brahmin code, actually. His own father said, you don't curse a king, not a pious king like Maharaj Parikshit. He's just been travelling around the world, preventing cow killing and all kinds, and upholding Vedic culture. Because what happened was, if there's no strong king, then what tends to happen is the outer provinces of the Vedic kingdom would tend to fall down to the lowest common denominator. And that's what was happening, cow killing and so forth. And Maharaj Parikshit had to come and basically re-establish Dharma. So they were saying, well, why curse a king like that? It was a big mistake. And Sringi, the young brahmana, realized his mistake afterwards. But as I mentioned earlier, once the arrow is fired, you cannot bring it back. A bit like when we say something, we can't bring it back. Like, this class has been recorded, so I've got to be really careful what I say. I cannot bring it back. You know, so similarly, such is the modern age now. So yeah, once a curse could gone, it could not be retracted. So we're cursed, actually. We're cursed to be born in the Kali Yuga. But there is a retraction. There is a retraction. There is some mercy. Parikshit got his mercy. Yeti got his mercy. We got our mercy. What is that mercy? It's the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there's no need for the kings to spend so much money on ghee and flowers and what to speak of killing horses and so forth. This is not the process. The process is exemplified and explained by Lord Nityananda. We don't even have to kill anyone. We don't even have to kill the demons and those that attack us, like Jayan Vijay. Yes, Jayan Vijay. Ultimately, Jayan, but Jagai Madai, ultimately. We don't have to kill anyone. We simply have to give them mercy. And we have to let the holy names, and of course, Prabhupada's books and the instruments we have, the temple, the deities, the facilities we have, to preach the holy names for the benefit of the world. This is our palace. We have our king, Shishirada Gokulananda, and queen, actually. And we have, Ram, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, certainly a king of the Treta Yuga. And we are the servants of the king. We're actually playing the parts of the brahmanas, in a sense. We have to live simply, ultimately, and to preach the holy names. Thus, honouring, actually, the lunar and sun dynasties of the world. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?